Apple is going Hollywood. The Wall Street Journal reports the company is planning to develop original television shows and movies. The move aimed at offsetting slowing sales of iPhones and iPads.
Nutella is going into battle with health campaigners. Italian manufacturer Ferrero saying it will keep using palm oil to make the chocolatey spread. That despite claims that the ingredient could contain cancer-causing chemicals.
No! God, please, no! No!
South Korea is suffering from a severe egg shortage and help is on its way. The U.S. plans to ship nearly 3 million eggs on Saturday. The Saturday shipments will mark the first time South Korea will import fresh eggs from the U.S. since 1999.
Hey,
get your eggs here. Fresh and
bright
eggs are here.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Friday. It's, unfortunately, the 13th of the month, and it's Friday, January 13th, 2017. I hope you're not, you don't have triskaidekaphobia, which is the fear of Friday the 13th, because it's going to be the Friday the 13th all day today. Thanks for being with us on another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day. Glad to have you along as we wrap up this business week. Lots to talk about today. You'll maybe get a pay raise this year. A lot of people already seeing wage growth. The last jobs report showed a 2.9% increase in wages. And will inflation, though, cancel that out? We'll be talking with a guest later in the program about that. In just a minute, we'll bring in Paul Nolte, our portfolio manager from Kingsview Asset Management. We'll talk the economy. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures are pointing towards some gains when the opening bell rings later this morning. Dow futures are up 29, the NASDAQ futures are up about 10, and S&P futures are up about 4. In Europe this morning, most of the indices are higher, all of them now higher. And in Asia, mixed showing overnight, the Nikkei finishing up almost a full percent, 152 points. Here's some news that you may have missed while you slept overnight. A federal appeals court has revived a lawsuit accusing Apple of having an illegal monopoly on the sale of iPhone apps. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals says the plaintiffs have the right to sue Apple because they purchased apps directly from the company. Apple had argued it did not sell apps, but instead acted as an intermediary used by the app developers. The ruling overturned a lower court decision on that. Of course, most of the apps come from the Apple Store, the iTunes Store, which obviously is run by Apple. China's exports fell back into contraction last month, signaling renewed weakness in the world's second biggest economy as it faces possible trade tensions under Donald Trump's presidency. Customs data posted to today shows that exports shrank 6.1% to $209.4 billion in December compared with a year ago. The Trump story this morning is this: a public relations win for President-elect Donald Trump's company says it will donate profits from any foreign governments that uses his hotels. But the experts at the ethics office say the public may never know if any money changes hands. The ethics office of the U.S. government is again warning the Trump administration that the steps it's taking to remove itself from daily activity in businesses is not enough to satisfy some of the ethics rules that have been withstood by presidents for years, decades. This morning, we're watching oil, by the way, as we look at the big board again at $52.44 a barrel. That is down almost a full percent. 5:10 now. Let's bring in Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul with us every Friday. Paul, let's begin with the news there about China with the exports. This is obviously going to be a big deal. It seems like there is a trade war coming. I don't want to be a negative person about that, but what do you think about all that?
You know, it'll be kind of interesting to see how this plays out. And our dealings with China from the trade front, when you look at the percentage of trade that we do with China, is actually fairly small. The most trade that we do with is, of course, our neighbors, Mexico and Canada, and then coming in third would be Europe, and then we've got the Eastern Asia coming in fourth, fifth, with Japan and China. So in the big scheme of things, it's not as big an impact on the U.S. Certainly some businesses import a lot more from China than others, but it's going to be, again, more the political posturing and trying to get what the deals that people people are looking for and the postures that we're trying to set up to create, in Trump's words, a better trade deal for the U.S.
Yesterday, we saw the Dow finish down about 63 points. At one point yesterday, it was off more than 183 points. I'm hearing people on Wall Street say the Trump trade may be over. What are your thoughts?
You know, it's interesting because we saw the huge rally after the election. We saw the markets go up 6% plus from the election to the end of the year. And we've been trading sideways now, really since early mid-December. And I think the markets are just taking a breather. Obviously, the markets can't go up 6% every 8 weeks forever. So they're taking a little bit of a break here. The dollar's coming down a little bit. Small caps are coming down. We're seeing a rotation back to some of the previous winners, like technology, which was doing very well up until the election. So I think really what we're looking at is just a rotation within the market, which is healthy to take out some of the excesses and allow the markets then to hopefully get themselves set up for another leg higher. A lot of the market internals that we take a look at still point to a relatively healthy market over the near term. So we could see the markets, again, once we get through this digestion period, maybe trend a little bit higher into the first quarter.
I know the last time we talked, we were a little concerned about bonds. What are you seeing on those markets?
You know, again, the same thing. Bonds sold off dramatically after the election on the expectation that there was going to be a lot of spending coming out of the U.S. Inflation was going to be significantly higher. We had the Fed raise rates. And again, as with the other markets, there's a little bit of a correction. So bond yields are coming down a little bit. Bond prices then are going up a little bit. And again, I think really it makes a lot of sense, in as much as I hate the terminology, but to follow Janet Yellen's lead of let's be data dependent. Let's see how things fall out. Any of the policies that get instituted within the next 90 days, their economic impact won't be felt really until the early part of next year, 2018. So I think we've got a little bit of a lead time here to worry about inflation, and I don't think today is a good day for it.
Paul Nolte is Senior Portfolio Manager, Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. You can always subscribe to Paul's notes, Nolte's notes, at kingsview.com/WGN. Paul, when we come back from traffic, we'll talk about the rubber chicken circuit. It's back underway in full swing. The Fed presidents and others are out talking about interest rates and the economy. As our conversation with Paul Nolte continues at 5:16 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, we're watching the stock of Boeing, BA is the ticker symbol, off just about a percent pre-market after announcing that they have sold almost 205 next-generation Boeing jetliners worth about $22 billion to India, to the low-cost airline there, SpiceJet. This is the opening bell.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, the 20,000 mark continues to elude investors. The Dow closed down 63 points yesterday at 19,891. The S&P 500 lost nearly 5 points, and the NASDAQ, which had been setting daily record highs, was off 16 points at the close. Shades of the Volkswagen controversy? Fiat Chrysler is refuting charges by state and federal regulators that it cheated on emission standards. Regulators accused the automaker of failing to disclose the use of software that allows some Chrysler SUVs and pickup trucks to evade federal emission standards. Takata may plead guilty to criminal wrongdoing as early as today to resolve a Justice Department investigation. The company's airbag inflators are linked to at least 16 fatalities around the world. And Amazon is going on a hiring spree. The online retailer plans to hire about 100,000 new workers over the next 18 months, mainly in California, Florida, New Jersey, and Texas, places where it's building new Amazon warehouses. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're on with Paul Nolte, as we are every Friday. Paul from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, this is a big day for banks. Starting today, we're going to see some of the earnings. A lot of the big banks come out today. Bank stocks have kind of not been taking it very well in the last few days. What do we expect today?
You know, when we take a look at the earnings picture of what we're expecting out of a lot of the banks, I think some of the run-up that we've seen since the election is the expectation that we're going to see a rollback of some of the regulations from Dodd-Frank. And we would expect to see their comments to be a little bit more bullish about the overall economy And certainly the difference in interest rates, the fact that interest rates have gone up a little bit, actually helps the banking sector. So as long as those continue to stay in place, I think the banking sector should fare reasonably well here.
Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, Chase, Wells Fargo report earnings today. The Fed presidents have been out on their rubber chicken circuit, as you like to call it, this week, talking about the economy. What have you heard there that's concerning or maybe something that we should put as a headline?
You know, it's kind of interesting when you get that many Fed officials together, as we've seen in their meetings now for the last, maybe 2 years, you can get an opinion very much aligned with whatever your thoughts were. So whether you think the economy is going at full speed ahead, or we've got to keep interest rates fairly low, there's a Fed official for you. So right now it looks as though many of them are concerned that Trump is going to be spending a lot of money. The economy is doing reasonably well right here, and so there's some inflation concern. There are some others that are very much a wait and see. Let's see how things go. And again, reiterating the point that I made earlier and the fact that whatever changes occur over the next 3 to 6 months are not likely to impact the economy until a year, year and a half from now. So again, more wait and see. So it depends on who you're listening to, but you can certainly get some that are going to talk about raising interest rates quickly and others that are willing to sit on their hands for a little while.
You know, we among those speaking last night, the chairwoman herself, Janet Yellen, was doing a town hall. She said, told the audience that the economy is doing well, faces no serious obstacles in the short term, and the labor market looks pretty strong. I heard one common thing among some of those presidents, though, that is they want to start seeing some specifics about Trump's plans.
Absolutely, because, again, it's kind of hard to assess what their impacts are going to be on the economy if you're really not quite sure what he's proposing. And when he had his press conference earlier in the week, we saw the markets move very dramatically on the expectations we were going to get a lot more information on spending, projects that might be going on, a little bit more meat on the economic bone, if you will. And unfortunately, we walked away not knowing a lot more than we did before the press conference as far as the economy is concerned. And that, you know, certainly created a little bit of volatility in the marketplace. And I think part of the reason why we're kind of stalling out here, because we're still waiting to see what's going to get proposed.
How long do you think he can go without giving specifics before people start getting really nervous?
Consider this part of his honeymoon period. And I think we've got the 100 days, which is stereotypical. When new presidents come in, we give them 100 days and see what they can accomplish and get done. He has certainly talked about doing some things within the first few days of becoming president. As far as, again, taking the pen to paper and rolling back some of the regulations and some of the, as he sees it, some of the onerous problems that some of the industries have. But again, it's going to be very difficult to get a good assessment until we do see those, and we've got 100 days to take a look at it and see. And based on recent history, we may be waiting much beyond those 100 days.
Paul, as somebody who deals a lot with money, and you certainly have fiduciary responsibilities to folks, you know a lot about this. Give our listeners a sense of why it's important, why we're hearing so many people talk about the divestiture of businesses by Trump and his cabinet members. We saw Steven Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary-designate, announce this week he's getting out of all of his businesses, Trump not so much. Why is this important?
Well, because, again, you want to act, again, going through the fiduciary, you're acting in the best interest of your constituent. In my case, I act in the best interest of my clients. We're asking the president and all the cabinet members to act in the best interest of the United States people. So if I'm having a deal with another country, entity, et cetera, and in the back of my mind, I've got, well, you know, if I make this deal, I can pick up a few extra dollars on the side over here because they're going to have to go through one of my businesses. That's going to certainly color the way that I go about negotiating whatever I'm doing. Stereotypically, a lot of the government officials put money into a blind trust. meaning they still have the business entities, but somebody else is running it. They don't get consulted. They have no input on what gets bought or sold or how businesses get run. They are essentially walled off from their assets for the time that they're sitting as a government official.
This notion that he says that it's impossible for him to do that completely, is that something that you've seen in your history?
This is very unique in the fact that we've never had a president with so many business interests. If you decompose all of his various entities and the businesses that he touches, it is very much a spider web of businesses. And in reality, I think very difficult to extricate himself completely from it. He is trying, but I think it's going to be very, very difficult in his sitting. Most of the people that we have coming into the government have some business interests, certainly stock or bond holdings. A lot of them come from the political side, so it's a little bit easier to wall them off. Very, very difficult, I think, in Trump's situation.
Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Always good chatting with you, Paul. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next Friday.
Absolutely.
All right.
Good luck today.
Thank you, Paul Nolte, Kingsview Asset Management. Again, you can follow Paul online. You can also request his Nolte notes, and that's at kingsview.com/WGN. 5:28, over to the newsroom. Vic Vaughn is standing by. Vic, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Coming up, a major announcement from the DOJ today about Chicago police may not see quite as major of a response from them. Our report next.
This is the opening bell.
From ABC News Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone, using IBM's supercomputer to go beyond regular identity theft protection. The Yahoo cybersecurity hacks have lots of users updating passwords and wondering just what the bad guys took. Identity Guard is one of many identity theft companies out there. They're now teaming up with IBM to use Watson, the supercomputer, to help fight ID theft. A product they call Privacy Now has a computer brain power to dig deeper online.
We could now scour the dark web not only for credit card numbers and Social Security numbers, but we can scour the web for all of the data that was taken in a breach like the Yahoo one.
Jerry Thompson is an executive at Identity Guard. He says Watson detecting all that data on the dark web where hackers sell information before it's used and impacts a credit report can save a whole lot of headaches.
Some of them it's as simple as, you know, canceling credit and debit cards.
Privacy Now costs about $20 a month. With Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone, ABC News.
WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. 5:39. We normally talk to Rixini today, our Fair Compare expert from faircompare.com. Rick is off today. He'll be back next week for a regular airfare, cheap airfare segment on Fridays. But this morning, we thought we'd continue the discussion about the economy, where things are going, and Donald Trump's plans for the new administration. On with us this morning is Andrew Gause. He's the author of The Secret World of Money and Uncle Sam Cook's The Book. He's one of the country's experts on the history of U.S. currency. And Andrew, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell. I guess I'd like to start first with the lack of details that we saw from Donald Trump's news conference this week. Based on what you've seen so far, where do you think we're headed with this?
Well, it appears to me as though the businessman and Mr. Trump is going to show up, look at the engine and say, oh, I see what's wrong with this, and fix it so that it runs smoother. But from the Fed's perspective, that means more inflation. That means other problems that they have to deal with, things that they've managed to keep in check thus far. So given the circumstances that the Fed has to deal with, it would be important for them to know what the president's plans are.
Let me ask you this, Andrew, because people have been asking me this question. Many people think the economy's cooking along fine right now. What more can Trump do to fix problems? I know he says he wants to add jobs, but aren't we already at full employment or close to it?
Mr. Trump's plan of slashing the corporate tax rate to 15% and then putting offsetting tariffs or whatever you want to call them, a border tax, an adjustment tax on companies that or countries that manipulate their currency and dump their products here, that by itself will bring jobs back at a blistering pace.
Doesn't it have to be done carefully, though? Because if you start taxing imports and exports and tearing up trade rules, isn't that going to impact companies in the United States?
Well, considering that in the last 10 years we've had an $8 trillion trade deficit, I don't see how we could hurt ourselves any more than we already have. Goodness, I think the only companies that are exporting now are those that have such an exclusive on the product that the competition can't compete or countries can't get that product anywhere else. So you have a handful of companies exporting, but the bulk of America's consumer goods are imported from other countries. And we as a treasury don't get any tax revenue from any of that stream. You take LG as a corporation, all the profit they make, well, that's given Korea the very best infrastructure in the world. But the United States, we don't see a dime of that profit. We don't tax it at all. And so we allow foreign countries to simply dominate our consumer market and then take all the tax revenue to improve their countries. We can see why ours is crumbling. But you go to China or go to Korea, and you see a glittering city with brand new infrastructure, all built on what should have been United States tax revenue.
American farmers might argue with you that we don't export anything from this country. They stand to lose quite a bit.
Well, listen, if people want to stop eating because we're going to tax their cheap imports, well, they can do that. But I believe that's one of those situations where the world needs food. And we've always taken the attitude that it's some sort of holy thing that we cannot use as a trade weapon. But in fact, if we don't, we're going to witness the United States crumble. So partners will, of course, get a better deal than belligerent nations. And certainly when you have a country like China that continues to devalue its currency, they're undercutting our competitiveness everywhere. That and the fact that they completely ignore environmental and worker safety regulations that American companies have to follow. So a combination of a tax policy, got to have a cut there. We're charging our corporations one of the highest rates in the world when they make income. Whereas in Korea, the first $200 million of a corporation's income is taxed at 10%. That would, of course, make us very competitive.
There is this, we've seen it over the past couple of jobs reports, a slow increase in wages. So wages are getting better, not as good as some would like. If we see inflation, that's sort of going to eat away all of those gains, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. Hopefully the offset is that the labor market tightens up and, of course, wages rise on supply and demand. You already have just simple service jobs. So I think the real issue in the jobs market is education. We're apparently not focusing our workforce education on areas that are needed. I've talked to tech company executives who tell me they can't find qualified help, no matter where they look. So I think a focus has to be on vocational training as opposed to all of this, I don't know what to describe it as, a liberal education, whatever you want to describe it as. It's certainly not useful to our youth.
You predict that inflation will rise by about 6% this year. What does that mean?
Well, given that the Federal Reserve has to contend with the budget needs of the nation, our debt ceiling expires in March, and it looks like another $1 trillion in deficits this year. Plus given the fact that the Obama administration chose to finance the bulk of our national debt in the short-term Treasury markets rather than 30-year bonds, we issued a lot of 1-, 2-, and 5-year notes. And in fact, 60% of the nation's debt is coming due and payable in Mr. Trump's first term. So Federal Reserve has to either borrow that money from the existing supply, which will exacerbate the interest rate situation, or simply monetize the debt as they've done before. That, I think, is the politically expedient choice, and that means inflation.
Well, it means inflation, and for consumers and for ordinary people, if they spend less in the economy, that's going to hurt the overall economy. What would your advice be to people to prepare for this 6% inflation rate?
Oh, that's like asking a barber if you need a haircut, Steve. I buy and sell gold and silver coins, and, today gold's up $12, silver's up 20 cents, so that type of a commodity, and art, antiques, jewelry, any of your physical tangibles are going to do quite well. What I would urge people to consider, however, is their bond position. Given that interest rates are under pressure to rise, not to fall, if interest rates rise, then existing bond funds, et cetera, will start losing principal. And that means you're not only not getting a return, but you're actually losing part of what you put in. So I would urge people to look at their bond and long-term debt market. Get short. Do not have long maturities in your portfolio. And take a look at my market, gold and silver coins.
For ordinary Americans who are barely making ends meet right now, who don't have money even to think about putting into the market,
Many of them are in just as much debt as they were around 2008. What would your advice to them be?
Build a pantry, first and foremost. You need to withstand price rises and, you know, the ability to forego purchases in times of increase while you find a replacement. So the old 70s, you know, if you were around in the 70s, if you weren't, find an older person and ask them, you know, what it was like, prices rising on a weekly basis and shortages of goods and things of that nature. So that's what you need to prepare for if you're living week to week.
Andrew, thanks for sharing your expertise with us. It's certainly going to be an interesting ride.
Thank you very much.
Andrew Goss is the author of The Secret World of Money and Uncle Sam Cooks the Books, a currency expert with us this morning on The Opening Bell.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:50 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures pointing toward gains on the markets. So when they open later this morning, Dow futures up 24, S&P futures up about 3, NASDAQ futures up about 8. Bank of America has just reported fourth quarter earnings, total revenue of $20 billion versus an estimate of $19.6 billion. Beating the estimate there. It is Friday, and that means it's time for our regular conversation with Orion Samuelson, who's with us this morning. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you, and for the final time this month at least, greetings from Arizona, where the American Farm Bureau Federation held its annual convention that ended on Wednesday, and still an unanswered question, who will be the Secretary of Agriculture? But I have to tell you, Steve, you and I have lived through an historic year in 2016. It was confirmed yesterday by the U.S. Department of Agriculture that never in the history of this country have we produced as many soybeans and as much corn as we did in 2016. Numbers are in, and they had pretty good reaction at the board yesterday, particularly soybeans. Now, the department lowered the final estimate 1% from the November estimate, but that still maintained record production for corn and soybeans. The soybean production estimated at about 4.3 million billion bushels yesterday. All in all, a good day, and soybeans went up 28¾ cents. They're giving a little bit back this morning, down about 4 cents, but it really was quite a year when you take a look at it.
So, Orion, when we tear these numbers apart, what's the story behind the numbers? What has this meant for farmers, and what is it going to mean going forward?
Well, it has meant for farmers the fact that prices went down. That's always the case. When the commodity supplies go up, then that puts downward pressure on the market, particularly wheat. And as a result, Steve, yesterday in that report, the projection from the USDA is that our winter wheat plantings, the lowest since 1909. Because of the glut of wheat around the world and the fact that American wheat is really pretty much priced out of the market. So it's going to mean financially, again, a difficult time for farmers this year because of the supplies. But this is the cycle we go through, and we have as long as I've been covering the agricultural story. Prices go up, we produce more. And then prices go down, and we try to still produce more so the volume will make up for the lack of price.
There is a lot of concern in global markets about the condition, the tensions, rather, between Donald Trump and China. We've seen customs data posted today that exports from China shrank about 6.1%. What's going on in the world markets here, and what should we be concerned about?
Well, I think the Chinese situation, we always have to keep in mind the Chinese government cannot afford to have hungry people in that country because that would bring about probably some revolutionary activity. And so they know they have to feed their people and they can't produce enough to do it at the moment. So we can have this going back and forth on various other issues, but they're still going to have to buy particularly soybeans, because they use soybeans now for human food, but also for livestock feed. And the demand for a meat diet is increasing in China. And, of course, the middle class in China now is bigger than the total population of the United States. So, yeah, there's going to be the jousting back and forth, but all in all, I think we'll be able to maintain our agricultural trade with China. And there are some other issues that need to be corrected with China. And I think they've got a good ambassador selected, Iowa Governor Terry Branstad, who has a 30-year relationship, personal relationship, with the current president of China. And so I think that's going to help. I think Branstad was certainly a good choice. Now let's hope that we can come up with a choice for Secretary of Agriculture, because that's the one cabinet position that hasn't been filled. And it was a topic of discussion by Farm Bureau members here in Phoenix this week. It was kind of interesting because a lot of issues. We have to write a new farm bill. We have the trade situation. We have the immigration farm labor situation. And as one State Farm Bureau president told me, we have lots of questions, but it's tough to come up with answers until we know who we'll be dealing with in the Trump administration.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that the news that we saw last week about it possibly being sunny Purdue may have been a trial balloon. And I heard the Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall say that they got a big, long list of possible candidates that they gave Trump. Is it possible that some of those people said no?
It is possible, but doubtful. I think when you get asked to be a cabinet officer, it would take a pretty good reason to say no. I had a conversation with Zippy Duvall here in Phoenix this week. I told him, I really don't know Sonny Perdue, so can you tell me about him? And of course, he was a two-term governor of Georgia. And Zippy Duvall does know him. He says he has a lot of agriculture in his background. He was very active in trade missions to help sell Georgia products to countries around the world. And he said he will bring, if he is selected, he will bring some strength to the agricultural community. There's still the word, of course, that the Trump administration is looking for a farmer. And I hear the name of Kip Thom, who was defeated for Congress by about 2 percentage votes. And I hear Chuck Connor, who is president of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, along with several other names that they keep tossing out there. But right now, Steve, it's a wait-and-see game.
All right, Orion, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, thank you.
All right, it's 5:57 now, the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook. For this Friday, January 13th, the Commerce Department releases two reports today, retail sales data for December, business inventories for November. The Labor Department is going to report on the U.S. producer price inflation for December. The two big financial institutions reporting before the bell this morning, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase. We'll see several others of the banks report later, including Wells Fargo. After the bell. Also today, we'll be watching for Expedition 50 astronauts on the International Space Station to conduct another spacewalk. It's the second to upgrade batteries. Congress will break later today. They'll break for the Martin Luther King holiday, which is on Monday. Those are just some of the things that could move the markets today on this Friday, January 13th. We'll continue to follow your money throughout the morning right here on WGN and in the Steve Cochran Show coming up next. And we'll be back bright and early Monday morning for another edition of The Opening Bell. I'm Steve Grzanich. Have a great weekend.